G-58, ICA headquarters, Buenos Aires, Argentina. As soon as the incredible alien flash subsided and the ICA delegates in the meeting room realized that it hadn't heralded the arrival of the messengers, but rather the unceremonious abduction of Chairman Godfrey, the eyes of each had darted around the room to instinctively make sure their closest companions were still present. Alessandro Bonucci proved no exception, gazing around in shock and feeling more than slightly eased that both he and Natalia were still there. The only thing that would matter to the masses was who wasn't there, however, as Alessandro and every other delegate knew only too well. At the very moment William Godfrey had begun to address his planet as leader of its first truly global and unconstrained point of contact with extraterrestrials, he had been taken in the most alien manner possible. Stronger than that, he had been abducted, quite clearly, without his pre-planned consent and very likely against his will. Natalia, whose mind always jumped to the PR angles of how the public would react, knew how bad this was. When many on Earth feared the powers of the messengers, fears stoked by the likes of the Blitz News reporter who had engaged with Cole moments earlier, an event like this happening on live TV was potentially catastrophic for something far more important than public opinion. It was a grave and immediate threat to public order. The power imbalance between races could hardly be illustrated any more clearly than by the unanimously elected political figurehead of one planet being unceremoniously and inexplicably abducted by visitors from another. And yet that was very evidently the scenario that had just unfolded. While others ran for the exit, President Slater quickly rose to her feet and stepped towards the podium. Acting like a natural leader and seeking to encourage order before chaos had a chance to fully break out, Slater was disappointed and visibly angry to be intercepted by her own security forces before she made it. Ding Ziyang was similarly whisked away almost immediately, while the room around him began to empty ever more rapidly. Some reporters joined the stampede-like exodus along with the fleeing delegates, while some of those more committed to their jobs and the paychecks that came with dramatic footage retained their positions and made sure to get the angles of everyone else's panic. Only a tiny handful of these reporters had been present for the broadly equivalent chaos in Colorado Springs when the explosion caused by a fortunately imperfect IED had ripped through the room upon which this room's decor was unmistakably modeled. These were the highest-ranking international correspondents from some of the major European stations, and each of them were among those who stayed behind. One reporter who didn't stick around for a second longer than she had to was the Blitz News representative with whom John Cole had made fast friends, and footage from the remaining cameras would later show her and her cameraman selfishly pushing some far older attendees aside as they sprinted for the exit. Some of the stay-behind foreign media personnel had reported from bona fide war zones and couldn't for the life of them understand why so many of the others had fled as though their chairs had been under fire. The flash had been frightening and disorienting, which no one would deny, but the physical chaos of its aftermath didn't make a whole lot of sense in their minds. Regardless of the contrarian views of this small minority of reporters, either brave or foolish, depending on the position of those making the judgment, ICA security staff quickly swept in to deal with the stragglers and clear the room completely. "Walls and locked doors do not stop the aliens," one French reporter insisted in vain as he was ushered out along with his two-man production team. "If they were a threat to us in here, they would still be a threat wherever you are taking us." No one resisted for more than a few seconds, all it took to see that these security guards weren't there to mess around and weren't going to hold back on anyone regardless of age, gender, or even physical impairment, and the wherever they were being taken ended up being a fenced-off exclusion zone immediately outside of the building's main entrance. This wasn't a decision made by any of the on-duty security chiefs, but was rather a well-rehearsed response to this kind of contingency. The overwhelming majority of the ICA's elite security force was composed of individuals trained by the Argentine military, which saw it as a badge of honor and source of national pride to assist in this way in such a crucial international endeavor. No one outside of this security force knew it, not even Godfrey, But a high-profile abduction during a meeting of delegates was one of countless scenarios they had trained for in recent months. Personnel selection and specialized training had begun long before the ICA's breakaway from the UN was confirmed, with William Godfrey having personally insisted to the holder of an office no lower than the presidency of Argentina that it was all just a matter of time. The Argentine president was now a very close ally who enormously and endlessly appreciated Godfrey's continued preference to base the world's most powerful agencies and bring its most powerful politicians to Buenos Aires rather than any other city in the world. While Argentines made up the vast majority, a supplementary percentage of the ICA's security force was provided by the militaries of Uruguay and Brazil in what was publicly understood to have been a symbolic olive branch of cooperation, but which had in fact been negotiated by the governments of those neighboring countries as a prerequisite for their support of the post-UN breakaway. Godfrey hadn't even attempted to talk them down, always having been keen to acquiesce to reasonable requests with a handshake and a smile so as to keep credit in the bank for the next time a more important dispute arose. The security agents wore dark blue uniforms with ICA emblazoned on their backs in bold white lettering and a small, stylized ICA logo in equally brilliant italicized writing on their heart area at the front. Every agent was between the ages of 24 and 34. All stood at least 5'11" tall, all had been subjectively judged to be sufficiently broad-shouldered and square-jawed, and all were male. Each of these requirements had been agreed not with William Godfrey's permission, but rather at his express insistence. The chairman had no time for political correctness and wanted his security force to look all business. Like an Eastern European infantry division, as he inelegantly put it during the early setup stages, or a squad of Clark McCarthy's. Now that they had been called upon for the first time, no one could argue that the hundreds-strong army of large and stern-faced men looked like an all-business force to be reckoned with. Facing off against a crazed assailant or even a group of terrorist attackers, few would likewise have doubted the power of this force to protect their building and its high-profile inhabitants. But as the stubborn French reporter had attempted to convey to the agent who bundled him outside, no conventional methods, or indeed any human methods whatsoever, could guard against the messengers if, for some reason, they ever became a true threat. But the continued outdoor hysteria exhibited by some delegates, and far more commonly by the unelected companions of others, showed the real reason everyone had been evacuated from the building. Put simply, frightened humans in confined spaces posed a threat both to themselves and each other. Jose Claros, a senior security officer considerably over the 34-year-old age limit of his charges, stood uneasily in his elevated position in a nearby building as he gazed down at the holding pen-like area, which currently housed several dozen national leaders and more than as many other senior political figures. This was an incredible and unsettling sight for Claros. Even though his men had worked efficiently to clear the building and were now doing exactly as rehearsed, with most providing a cordon for the evacuated guests and a small number dealing with those who were being disruptively and dramatically visual in expressing their unease at being contained in what was a comfortably vast exclusion zone. Containing the delegates in an enclosed outdoor pen, theoretically exposed to all manner of threats, was a tactic only to be used in situations such as this one, when a non-terroristic threat, or perceived threat, had been detected in the building. Snipers or window-based shooters with less focused weaponry were a huge consideration following some high-profile incidents in other cities, but no buildings with any windows facing the street were occupied by any other than ICA personnel with sufficient clearance. The large buildings directly across the street, such as the one Claros was now standing in, had once housed agencies of the city government and were vacated a few years earlier when William Godfrey first chose Buenos Aires as the site of his fledgling GSC. The buildings were now often used as extra office space, but on days like today, when an unusually high number of VIP delegates were present, they were used as security lookouts. It was certainly far from ideal that so many media personnel were on hand while the evacuation became necessary, But this fact couldn't be helped and had to be ignored while the important steps were taken to make sure every delegate made it out in one piece, that every ICA staff member was accounted for, and that vehicles had been called to collect the most important of all attendant VIPs in the order specified by a master list to which only senior security officers had access. This ordered list would have come as little surprise to anyone had it ever been leaked in full, beginning as it did with Dan McCarthy, Tara Ford, and William Godfrey. There may well have been some minor controversy that Ding Ziyang then preceded Valerie Slater, and even more so that Godfrey's favorite Argentine assistant, a loyal man by the name of Manuel, who he had known since first inhabiting the building during its early GSC days, took precedence above John Cole in rounding out the list of 10 ultra-high priority evacuees, along with the national leaders or other attending delegates from Argentina, Russia, Japan, and Fiori Frontieri. The ongoing site clearance wouldn't fully expose the list, since no one would know how rigid it was or how much of the final vehicular evacuation order was happenstantial, particularly given that none of the agency's three highest-ranking officials were present. Claros looked out for signs of approaching vehicles, but didn't see any just yet. This wasn't unexpected, but he unclipped the radio from his belt in readiness to check in with some colleagues who were looking out to the other side of the neighborhood. As he lifted it, though, a voice called through the speaker seeking permission to force entry into Dan McCarthy's ultra-high security top-floor office. While surprised and initially disturbed that there were still agents on the top level of the huge building, Claros was very glad to have received the call. "Do it," Claros said. "In and out, as quick as you can."